Well, hello. My name is Pete Gallagher. I'm with the Florida Folk Show here on Radio St. Pete, and we're going to have a special show today. I've got Mr. Gene Kelly from the Florida Native Plant Society, and we're going to be talking about the environment today and about the wildlife corridor and the Withlacoochee State Forest and all the important things that are going on right now in the Florida environment. I can start off by saying that in all my years working in environmental pursuits, over 50 years, I've never seen a time where the public has responded so swiftly in such large numbers to a environmental tragedy, I guess I would like to call it, when the governor of Florida decided, has made several decisions on making golf courses in state parks, also in state forests, all done in secret. And so that's why it's an enormous undertaking that's been in the planning for years and many, many months of intensive work by his staff in secret, including the man who drew the maps, the cartographer, had to work at home. He's the father of an 11-year-old girl and had to work at home on a laptop doing all that work. And we'll talk about him a little bit later. But Gene, welcome to Radio St. Pete. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Okay. Thanks for having me.
And Joe Berdoe's here. How you doing, Joe?
Fine, thank you.
All right. Joe's the engineer today, including the man that's in controller of all that goes on here with Radio St. Pete. And we have a lot of respect and appreciation for what he does, because without this radio, there would be a big void in music and also entertainment and also environmental reporting, I think, in the Tampa Bay area especially. And Gene, can you give us a rundown? I first knew about you when I saw you walking. I saw you a story in the newspaper, the Tampa Bay Times, I think it was, and you were out in the wilderness there and just walking around, taking a look at what was there. And you have a great knowledge, I guess, of the Withlacoochee State Forest. Can you give a little history about that place?
Well, the State Forest has been there a long time. It's split up into a number of different tracts. And the real controversy right now is that a parcel that had been set aside as mitigation for construction of the Suncoast Parkway was added to the state forest to compensate for impacts from construction of the highway. And now there is a proposal to surplus that land, basically sell it back into private ownership. And in payment, there would be an exchange by which a developer would take the 324-acre parcel, and the state would, in exchange, receive an 861-acre parcel in Levy County, a couple of counties to the north. The parcel is part of what we call the Citrus Tract. It's somewhere, I believe, between 40 and 50,000 acres. It's renowned for, among other things, its sandhill habitat. It's got a thriving population of red-cockaded woodpeckers, a species that's listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. This 324-acre parcel, it is not suspected to have red-cockaded woodpeckers on it. It's not good habitat for that right now. It's not what you would call sandhill right now. It is a sand pine plantation. So a previous owner planted it in sand pines, and the crop of pines on there now probably planted around 1998 or so. So they're 25, 26-year-old trees. But we know it was Sand Hill historically, Sand Hill habitat, which in contrast is dominated by longleaf pine instead of sand pine. And Sand Hill would have a very open canopy. It's really more of a grassland than a forest. And that current growth of sand pines, basically, it has almost eliminated all the native sand hill vegetation that had been there historically. It just can't take all that shade, all that litter, pine needles falling from the sand pines. But it is primed to be restored to sand hill habitat.
And what do you mean by that, primed to be restored?
Well, it has the right soils.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of remnant vegetation there still, native plant species that are associated with sand hill habitat. So there's probably a seed bank in there. So if you, it might look a little messy at first, but to restore it, you go in and you clear cut the sand pine and you restore all that sunshine to the ground. And that vegetation, a lot of it is going to really rebound. You'll have some response from seed bank. I would imagine the Forest Service would pretty quickly go in and do some random planting of longleaf pine, the pine that should be there, the one that was there historically. And then you manage it, and over time, it's restored to Sand Hill. It's one of those projects that, if I was starting a project like that, I wouldn't get to see it be good, mature sandhill again,
mm-hmm.
With red-cockaded woodpeckers living in it. But
this was all discussed in the early days when they decided to purchase that property.
Well, I'm sure that restoration to Sandhill was the real purpose. And in fact, my understanding is the environmental impacts that this parcel was supposed to provide compensation for was impacts to sandhill habitat. So it makes sense that mm-hmm. in exchange for nice sandhill that is now a highway, you would get some habitat that could readily be restored and is contiguous with the existing state forest property.
So here comes a plan to extend a golf course that is already there on one edge of that property that you've been describing. And what does that do to that property, the putting in of that golf course?
Well, you mean if they, instead of restoring it to Sand Hill, they convert it to golf course? Well, it would never be habitat for red-cockaded woodpeckers again. We know there are a lot of gopher tortoise burrows out there, active tortoise burrows. You'd basically be evicting the wildlife that's there now to accommodate a golf course. And maybe it's a golf course that they have in mind. Cabot Citrus Farms is the name mm-hmm. of the resort golf development. As it stands now, I believe they have 3 18-hole golf courses completed. So I don't know how many more holes of golf they need. Maybe they want to build houses on it. Maybe they want to maybe pickleball courts. I hear there's a lot of interest in that now. It's one of the things that was proposed for a lot of those state parks. But this is land that the state owns. It was conveyed to them as compensation for environmental impacts, and it has a lot of conservation value. That's why it made sense for it to be added to the state forest as mitigation. And it just makes no sense in terms of conservation to do this swap. it makes a lot of sense if you're Cabot Citrus Farms and they would like to add on to their development.
Right. In the way you're describing it, if we were all in a big room or a room between a seller and a buyer of Florida property, it sounds reasonable if you don't really care about the land that you're taking and making it into a golf course and evicting all these endangered species and future habitats. Why? What is the purpose? What did anybody gain by doing this secret? In fact, this particular plan to do this went all the way through the system, all the way to the very end, where they have to take it before the acquisition and lands
acquisition and restoration council.
Restoration council. Which is includes I don't know how many people, not 10, 20 people, most of them appointed by the governor, and nobody knew about it until, of course, somebody leaked the information to Max, the reporter at the Tampa Bay Times. I mean, what is the purpose of being secretive about it?
You don't ask a question unless you think you're going to get the right answer.
Well,
so,
if
they really wanted to make a good decision on behalf of the public, of the people of Florida, then when this proposal was floated, they should have asked the professionals. They should have started with the Florida Forest Service and said, does this make sense? Does this 324-acre parcel really matter? And isn't it a good deal if we get more than 800 acres in exchange? And the resource professionals would have said, no, it doesn't make any sense to have 800 acres isolated. It's not under threat. It's not especially unique in terms of its habitat value, its future habitat value. It's much better to have that bird in the hand, contiguous with what they already own, and follow through with the restoration. If they didn't want to hear that answer, then maybe you just don't ask the question. But they didn't make a final decision, because when the governor and cabinet gave their approval to this, there were conditions, one of which was the Florida Forest Service would have to agree, and to my knowledge, there has been no formal official statement that they agree with following through with this, and it would have to be reviewed by ARC, the Acquisition and Restoration Council, and then the final decision would still rest with the governor and cabinet based on the input they received from ARC. And my understanding, in cases like this, they might have to approve it by a supermajority, not just a majority vote, but typically when a state agency wants to surplus conservation land, they have to make a determination it has no conservation value, and the people in charge of making that decision have to agree by a supermajority.
But still, I listened in to the last ARC meeting because the rumor was that this was going to come up in some way. It did not. It might have come up. Still, why not put it through all these hoops? If you want to make it happen, if the governor thinks that this is a good thing for this state, it'll increase the income by the parks, which, by the way, is pretty high up there. The amount of money that the state parks in Florida make, they're not running dead out there. They're making a lot of money for the state, and it makes you wonder sometimes, where does that money go? Each state has a plan that they have to put together, each state park, for their future improvements that they have to do in each park. And I know for a fact that even some of the little parks, like Stephen Foster Memorial Park, is a mess up there. They need a lot of work done. They there. That's where the Florida Folk Festival happens, the largest continuous folk festival in the United States. And it's in pretty poor shape. And then at the same time, the governor this session vetoed all the cultural and art funding all over the state, cities, everywhere. And that meant the Florida Folk Festival, too, as well. So they don't have the money to, properly pay a director of the Florida Folk Festival. They really don't have a director right now. The previous director has agreed to stay on for another couple months until they see what comes together. The state folklorist is paid by a grant that somebody got for him through the Department of Natural Resources. Everybody's squandering and scrambling around. But that's all being done in the open. The issue with the golf courses, a lot of people didn't know a whole lot about it. They don't have the knowledge that you have, and so a lot of the people were wrong in some of their anticipations about what was going to happen. But the thing I'm talking about is that it was done in secret, and it was released when the governor was in Ireland. Okay, has anybody looked at his and travel records? Who did he take to Ireland with him? And why did he stay a couple days longer after the team got beat? He still stayed. And there were his guys, and it got released, and they couldn't get a hold of him. Or maybe they did, and they didn't want to let anybody know what he said, and they came right out and made statements like, this is good for Florida. Even though this got leaked out ahead of time, we weren't really done, but this is going to be a good thing for Florida, you know? And practically nobody out there, none of the newspapers, none of the environmental agencies that would talk up, were nothing but just abhorred by this entire thing. And meanwhile, he came back in, and his first comments were like, I didn't really know anything about this. I didn't, I knew there was something there. This wasn't ready yet. It wasn't on the, but these guys were on order to get that done right away so that he could come back. And the day, that ARC meeting was right after he came back. And instead it got blown out of the water by the press. And I mean blown out to the point where it was on every major news story in the country. I saw it on CNN one night. I got up in the middle of the night and it was on. CNN was still on, and there it was. And there was Barney, Captain Barney, that was on the radio with us last week, out there playing his guitar, and everybody had these signs out there. And that was in Dunedin for Honeymoon Island, which is Dunedin is where the governor's from. And it's one of the smaller parks, but it's very, very well attended out there, and people love that park, and they're going to stand up for it. Did he really know? Did he anticipate that? That's the question I want to know. Did you anticipate it? You did, or did you not? You're doing a big deal. You're bringing it in. How do you bring a big deal in? You go through all the hoops, but not this time.
It doesn't look good, obviously. And it was an outrageous idea. What they wanted to do, those kinds of developments, they have no place in a state park. And, I can't say I'd have predicted that the public would have responded as vociferously, as strongly as they did. I appreciate that they did. I think it's a good sign. The people of Florida have supported land conservation, totally nonpartisan, for decades now, going back to the late 80s. And this just goes to show that support is pretty darn sincere. It's kind of visceral, and people have a special relationship sometimes with these parks, a park that might be very special to them. And I think we saw that, and
many stories of that
were
coming out, individual stories of people that was their place to go,
And you do have to wonder, with the way that it was rolled out, if the intention was to sneak it past the people, so that they didn't have the opportunity.
What else can you What else can you bring up? That's why you need to have him come forward and say, "This is why we did it this way." The first time this happened, and there may have been a time before this, but not to this extent, was when Governor Scott wanted to put cattle pastures into Myakka River State Park, where the trees had been saying, "Oh, hey, it used to be a cattle pasture way back in the old days." Well, the old days were like 75 years before that, and now there are big trees there, and there was that new habitat and everything else. And also, I believe golf courses came up at that time too. And the immediate slam of that, but he wasn't as sneaky about it. The immediate slam of the public, and it was here, there, and gone tomorrow. In fact, the Department of Environmental Protection wrote a somebody up there. I don't know the whole story, but somebody up there wrote a column that they wanted printed in all of this Florida newspapers saying, "Hey, you people aren't looking at it the right way. This is going to be good for the state. The state's going to make all this money from these cattle ranchers and all this stuff." And they signed the name of it to the name of the writer as the Florida State Parks Director. He didn't even know about it. That's for a fact. And he eventually resigned because of that. He had no idea that they were going to do that, and that thing absolutely. He refused to approve it. Didn't matter. It had actually ran, and I remember picking up the paper saying, "I can't believe this guy wrote this." You know.
Well, and during the Scott administration, you brought up Honeymoon. Well, there was a proposal then to put an RV park in Honeymoon and a number of other parks. And the public responded in exactly the same way. I tried to go to the meeting at Honeymoon Island, and I couldn't get within a couple hundred feet of the front door. That was during the Scott administration. I can't remember exactly what year it was, 2014, maybe 2016, but maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise here a month back when the public responded the way they did, because they responded the same way then that they did mm-hmm. before. And in fact, proposing golf courses at Jonathan Dickinson, this was not the first time that had been proposed. And I think it was actually the third time. A bad idea is a bad idea. Bringing it up a few years later doesn't necessarily make it any more palatable. And so you got to wonder, the secrecy, apparent secrecy, because it sure looks like they wanted to just pull this out, get it passed through the process before the public even knew it was happening.
Well, even the Republican members of Congress, Rubio and Scott himself, they came out against it. But the way they came out against it, the way Scott came out, he didn't come out in front and say, "This is a dumb thing. Look, I know I did that back then, but I shouldn't have done it. I've learned a lot since I've been in Congress, you know, and I think it's a bad idea." No, he just signed his name to the letter. And then the quote went out as if it came from Rubio and Scott. Okay, because Rubio's not running for re-election, but Scott is. And you can bet that if he admitted that he was in favor of this thing, he wouldn't get elected. And of course, all the newspapers from the Wall Street Journal on down, that I check a lot of them out, Washington Post, they're all saying, well, DeSantis has cooked his goose now. Because everywhere he goes, somebody's going to ask, the issue is going to come up.
Well, you know, I was really thrilled with the way that the public responded to the proposals for the state parks. And now I would say that Governor DeSantis and the members of the cabinet have an opportunity to show us that was a mistake. You're not really understanding where we're coming from. And in the case of this proposal to swap parcels at the Withlacoochee State Forest, they can just pull the plug on that. They can end it and show us that, you know, now that the information is coming out about the natural values of the parcel that the golf course developer wants, they have the opportunity to say, you know, we had this process lined out. The Florida Forest Service had to approve it. It had to be reviewed by ARC. And if it even goes to ARC, mm-hmm. I'm hopeful, honestly, that the director of the Florida Forest Service will say that this is not a good deal for the state forest. And so, no, we don't approve of this.
What was their first reaction to fire the whistleblower? Not only that, they went into his private paperwork or personnel file. And usually it takes a long time to get somebody's personnel file under the public records law, and to find out that he had some kind of a charge levied against him of bothering one of the other employees that he used to be married to that he was getting a divorce from. He wasn't scolded for it or fined or fired or anything else, but he eventually left there and joined the DEP. And the first thing they did was to try to smear him. Now, that could not have been done by the press in that quick manner. That was dropped. That was taken down officially and released to the public by the government itself. Okay, a lot of this other stuff you're reading is stuff that was leaked out to the Tampa Bay Times and then re-reported all over the world. And here's this guy, you know, he put a GoFundMe in for $10,000. He's fired. He did all this work. The way he described it in an interview that I heard is that it was making him sick as he was drawing the maps and these properties where it was going to go. He knew what that was going to happen to the habitat. It was making him physically sick. He couldn't take it anymore. And they fired him for not putting the public's interest ahead of his own.
Well, I, you know, the heads of these agencies, you know, are elected officials. They're elected to serve us, to represent us. They take an oath to that effect. So it's our interests that they're supposed to have at heart. And when we talk about the state forest, the parcel swap, that's the precedent that really concerns me, is that these decisions should originate from within the agency that is responsible for managing those lands, for protecting those natural resources. There is a process in place for surplusing lands because it makes sense. Occasionally when you do a big land conservation project, there might be some little pieces here and there that really don't make sense for them to retain ownership of for conservation purposes. And the process that's established by statute, after they approve the decision to surplus by making that determination that it has no conservation value, and then it's approved by a supermajority vote, then it can be sold. And the funds that are generated have to go back into the land acquisition trust fund so that they can be used to purchase more, presumably better, conservation land. In this case, it was Cabot Citrus Farms, a development company developing a golf resort, that floated this proposal. And that really makes me nervous. Those lands were vetted for protection, for conservation purposes, owned by the state, held in our interest, and for all future Floridians. And if a developer can come in and look at a piece of conservation land and think that, you know, they would like to develop it, if they're the ones making the decisions about what is conserved and what isn't, then I think that really could turn the public away from that support for land conservation. It would corrupt the whole process. It's hard to support a land conservation program that then, at the will of a developer.
But you know, the biggest screw up of all, to the governor and the other people that were behind this, is they are creating now a new breed of conservationists out there, the young people. There's a lot of a lot of the complaint about that, and a lot of people I saw waving signs, even in the Marjorie Douglas property in Dunedin, when they were trying to take that over, Pulte Homes, the United States' largest home builder, wanted to put in 44 big giant townhouses on a piece of property that had been preserved, sand pine property was filled with gopher tortoises and everything else. And the public got out there, the people at Dunedin got out there, and they were out there every Friday at 5 o'clock with signs and everything else. But now, you multiply that by hundreds of people. Anybody out there, no matter how old they are, of a certain age, are going to say, wait a minute, putting a golf course in a state park? It's a dumb thing. It sounds like a stupid thing. My son that's out in Oklahoma heard about it and called me, and he said, what's going on with that? You know, I've never known him as an environmentalist or anything else. He's a carpenter, a trim carpenter, and works out there, and he's building homes out in the outskirts of Oklahoma City, which is now a bigger city than Oklahoma City. Just, you know, what we're seeing in Florida, when you go out State Road 70 and when you go east and you see these subdivisions all of a sudden cropping up, that's what he's dealing with out there. But to a state park, you know, it meant something, even if he didn't even know the details about it. You know, it's just a lot of people know it, and it's probably, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure it's showed up on Saturday Night Live and on the comedy routines and everything else.
it's over the top.
Well, what can you do now? What is your next step?
I want to convince the director of the Florida Forest Service to say this is a bad idea, that they will not support.
Who is
this? Rick Dolan is the current director of the Florida Forest Service. And unlike the state parks, those are housed within DEP, which is an executive department under the governor. The Florida Forests State Forest System is part of the Department of Agriculture. So his boss, Director Dolan's boss, is Commissioner of Agriculture Wilton Simpson. And so Commissioner Simpson was there at that cabinet meeting. There was no discussion when they approved this. It was not on the agenda 2 days before that. It was put on the agenda last minute and approved with no discussion. And so let's have that discussion now that was missing then, and let the resource professionals talk about, does this make sense? And the resource professionals will concur, I'm telling you, that this does not make sense.
It's a waste of our time. It's a waste of good political time, and the effort it does to run the state of Florida. It's wasting time. What about the Florida Native Plant Society? That's your
yes.
Are you the president of it?
I am.
Yeah. How many members do you have?
Right now, I think we're about 6,300.
And you have chapters all over the state?
30 chapters. We have one of our biggest chapters is right here in Pinellas County. The Native Plant Society's mission includes conserving, preserving native plants and native plant communities. And we accomplish that mission a lot of different ways. We support scientific research by awarding grants, research on native plants. We advocate every year for more funding for land conservation. The best way to ensure there's a future for native plants and native plant communities is to protect the lands where they are. We have one side of the society, we really advocate for landscaping with native plants. They're more adapted to our climate. It supports native wildlife, native pollinators. But in this case, we have Sandhill Habitat, really one of the most valuable natural communities that we have in Florida for its ability to sustain a lot of different wildlife species. And it was entirely appropriate that this particular parcel be offered up as mitigation. You can debate, and I have before, the merits of mitigation as a strategy for dealing with the impacts of development. Wetland mitigation, when you create wetlands, for example, how well do they work? A lot of the times, not so well. So you can have that debate. But here we have 324 acres purchased and conveyed to the state forest to mitigate for environmental impacts. What does it mean to mitigate if now a developer wants that land, and so the land that was intended to mitigate for impacts to Sandhill Habitat will now instead go to be developed by a golf course developer and will get 800 acres of slash pine plantation, not contiguous with other public lands. So mitigation for the mitigation. And at some point, that word mitigation becomes pretty darn meaningless. I think we're at that point. The public is not getting its due if a deal like this can go through. And, I really am confident that this will not happen because it is such a terrible idea. And there are a lot of us watching and pointing out the value. When all this was going to happen, you can be sure that there were assessments done by the Department of Transportation. Would this parcel make sense? This map that I showed you today, it's a map that was produced by the Department of Transportation that identifies the parcels that the Florida Forest Service said they would consider a priority to receive and incorporate into the state forest as mitigation for the impacts that were going to be caused by the Suncoast Parkway. And this parcel was one that 6-8 years ago, the Florida Forest Service said, that right there, that is a priority. Get us that one. And they would have assessments. Staff would have, looked at maps, and resource professionals, foresters, forest ecologists would have looked at that and said, this one, and maybe that one over there. Where are those assessments? Where are those reports? They're a public record, and I know that they are out there somewhere. And we've been asking around. We can't get our hands on them. But that's the kind of information mm-hmm. that should be front and center, and it would show not a good idea. And so we did finally get our hands on this map. And it would be hard to argue that the Forest Service does not see conservation value in that parcel mm-hmm. when they themselves put that on the map, basically a map that is their wish list of what they would like as mitigation for impact to Sandhill Habitat.
The Florida Folk Show is here on November 16th, a Saturday morning. We're going to be broadcasting live from Archbold Biological Station.
That's a magical place.
Magical place, and it's been there well over 50 years, and it's one of the last ranges of the Florida scrub jay. and Jonathan Dickinson State Park being probably the largest habitat for the scrub jay. And we've been advocating on the air, like, you know, why not change the state bird from the mockingbird to the scrub jay? Because the scrub jay is endemic to Florida, supposedly the only endemic bird to Florida. It lives and dies in Florida. It's not a migratory bird. In fact, when we were out there scoping out the place a couple weeks ago, they took us for a little trip in the outback there, and we stopped in a certain place and got out of the Jeep, and all of a sudden, flocks of scrub jays. I'd never seen one in my life, and there they were all over us, because these guys come out there at a certain time on certain days, and they give them peanuts, and that allows the researchers are all out there with their pads, getting the colors of their bands on their legs, and and seeing how they're doing. They're you know, the males, the females, they're doing research, and man, I said. But the bird is on the threatened list, and should be endangered, really. And the habitat that it lives in, that it has to have, is the same habitat as the gopher tortoise and a whole bunch of plants, bears. It's a magical habitat out there. In fact, they've seen the Florida panther crawling through there as well over the years. And so I'm hoping we're gonna go out there and. Do another show live from Archbold, and we have a couple of singers that are coming on that do songs about the scrub jay. Rita Youngman, a Seminole Indian songwriter, will be there talking about the bird clan. There's the big bird clan and the little bird clan. The little bird clan is the scrub jay and birds that are of that size in the Seminole lore. So just. Hoping that we can get some kind of ball rolling, because I remember in the early days of the Florida Panther movement, we didn't have a state mammal, and so they wanted to name it. And what they did is they took pictures of the bear, the panther, different mammals, and sent them to fourth graders, and they voted on it. And of course, it was overwhelmingly the snarling panther, mm-hmm. you know, was chosen. But that won't work this time. We need somebody to make, and it's come before the legislature before. And the idea being, if you save the bird, you save the habitat. And the way the Endangered Species Act works, you have to save the habitat. Mm-hmm. The animal can't live without the habitat.
Well, and in the case of the Florida scrub jay, as the name implies, they are entirely habitat-specific. Scrub, that's where they occur. Florida scrub. I think it would be a terrific idea to make it the state bird. No, nothing against the mockingbird. Mockingbird is the state bird in several other states.
Right.
I have to tell you, I kind of envy you getting to go and spend time there at Archbold. I love whenever I have a chance to go there. The Native Plant Society, we've had several retreats there over the years. And for native plant enthusiasts, there are, you know, a couple dozen endemic plant species that basically occur nowhere else other than the scrub habitat right there in Highlands and Polk mm-hmm, County mm-hmm. from Archbold, stretching up north through those counties, the Lake Wells Ridge. Totally unique in the world. It's a really fascinating place for a botanist, a plant ecologist like me. I would like to bring up, you mentioned, you know, the bears and panther, they occur there. We haven't discussed the Florida Wildlife Corridor, but that has become really one of the central aims of our land conservation program, is to focus our conservation efforts.
People understand it.
Yes.
People understand a corridor for animals to move.
Right. So if you look at the configuration of the Florida Wildlife Corridor here through the citrus tract of the Withlacoochee State Forest, it shows a connection between coastal habitat on the Gulf of Mexico, the Chasawitzka Wildlife Management Area, which is managed by the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and then just northeast of that, you have Withlacoochee State Forest, the citrus tract. And in between, there is a Florida Forever Land Conservation Project. It's been approved and in the works for a couple decades now. The Water Management District, Southwest Florida Water Management District, first started acquiring parcels in that project area back in the 90s, trying to piece together a continuous corridor between Chassawitzko Wildlife Management Area and Withlacoochee State Forest. This parcel is right there in the middle of that connection. And if you look at it on a map, the corridor gets really narrow. Because there's been so much development through there. If you want to preserve that connection between those major areas of habitat, that is where you have to do it. And if you take out this 324-acre parcel, the width of that narrow little corridor is cut in half. So we talk about natural resource values, the sandhill habitat, the potential to restore that, and the species that use that habitat. We talk about just the commonsensical nature that it's contiguous with the state forest. It's part of this large tract, tens of thousands of acres of conservation land with red-cockaded woodpeckers on it. There are no red-cockaded woodpeckers at Chassawitzko Wildlife Management Area, I don't believe. There could be. They have a lot of good, well-managed longleaf pine habitat. They, as well as the Forest Service, are doing a tremendous job managing the habitat in those two different conservation areas. If you don't preserve that tenuous connection in the Florida Wildlife Corridor, you're just not going to maintain that connectivity. And the possibility that a species like the red-cockaded woodpecker will be able to fly south, southwest specifically, and set up shop in Chassawitzko Wildlife Management Area, expand their range, a federally threatened species. So
instead of on the ninth hole.
I mean, it's not rocket science, this conservation biology. We've got all this information, all this data, and so we really do know the best lands to conserve, and this is some of it. And the notion that you would, at the whims of a private business interest, give something like that up, compromise the future. You know, this is all about long-term vision for the state of Florida, and will we have a network of conservation lands that really function and sustain all our native wildlife?
Well, you saw that Jack Nicklaus got out of there pretty quick. You know, when they first started talking about Jonathan Dickinson, and his company was right there, standing there in front of the camera saying, "No, we're not going to participate in this."
It was a terrible look, so yeah. I can imagine that a lot of the players wanted to just get out of the room as quickly as they could.
Gene, thanks a lot, man. We're coming to the end of our time, and I appreciate you coming in, traveling all the way down here and all this traffic and everything. And you should have planned to go to see the race tonight.
I believe I have tickets for Sunday.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we'll see you out there. Thank you, Joe.